Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the upcoming Outlander series or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 29 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander. So announcements this week. We have several announcements before we get into the meat of this episode. I will tell you right now that chapter 24 is a long chapter to begin with. That being said, we had to break the read-along into two parts because it took us 2 hours. And that's before we went in and took out all the extra pauses and things. But we were having to edit down our two-hour read-along to two episodes. You will get a break, and maybe if you're not ready to continue reading forward to the next chapter, you have 2 weeks to read this chapter. So back to announcements. So the first thing they gave us this week was on their Instagram account, and it is a picture, backstage, obviously, of Jamie and Dougal, and I call them that because they are in costume, playing Scrabble. Interesting news, Diana Gabaldon is releasing her novella, The Space Between. Previously, it was only available in the anthology entitled Mad Scientist's Guide to World Domination, but they are releasing it, and I like to think they're doing this for us.
Oh, yeah.
For the fans who are...
Because we're still waiting for Moby, and we're waiting for Outlander.
For the fans who are just, like, clutching for anything new from the Outlander-verse. So this should tide us over, perhaps. I mean, it's a novella. It's probably not very long, so it'll tide us over for a few hours, at least, between
now. I thought you were going to say till Moby. I'm like, no.
For when it comes out. That's
why we have a podcast, right. Summer. This is what we talked about. Also this week, and I apologize up front, I do need to practice the Gaelic of this name. But in Amerispeak, I'm going to say Adam O'Brien, the Gaelic expert, consultant to Outlander, to the entire production, was on BBC Radio Nan Gael earlier this week discussing in Gaelic, which I think was pretty awesome. It's so Gaelic media. A few weeks ago, there was an article in Gaelic that was published, and now there is more Gaelic language media discussing Outlander and the production, etc., and his role. As consultant. So it was very nice, and we've linked to it, but unfortunately the archive, quote unquote, on the BBC was only available for 7 days, so probably won't be able to listen to that, but it was a lot of fun just to hear that.
Now the parallels that I have with this is, for me personally, is that when I lived in Cherokee, North Carolina in the Indian Reservation for 2 summers, there was, at that time, almost no one spoke Cherokee anymore. Mm. And in the last few years, there's been a resurgence, and almost every kid now on the reservation can speak Cherokee, at least a little bit. Like, they're learning it in schools now, and so it's something that's, it's not just a dying language anymore, so now it's actually something that's, you know, alive and well, and I get excited when I see it. So this is kind of the same thing for me, where not everyone speaks Gaelic, but I think that this is going to be maybe a resurgence for them, so that more people will speak Gaelic, so maybe there'll be more places to find it, more places to hear it, and maybe Rosetta Stone will pick up on the hint and create their own.
We would love for it to be
Gaelic, Scottish Gaelic. I would buy that, Rosetta Stone, FYI. Think about it, because then we could go back. They're not going to subtitle the Gaelic.
I know, and they
so
shouldn't.
I know they shouldn't, but what I'm saying is that for me, that would be totally worth it for me to watch the whole thing and do it like Claire, so that I don't know what they're saying, but then to get the Rosetta Stone and learn it, and then go back and watch it and understand it. I think that would be super cool. Anyway. Back to announcements. Ron Moore was on Last Call with Carson Daly. He talked a lot about previous projects as well as Helix and Outlander. So anything earth-shattering from that?
No. Nothing just, new? It was interesting. He talked a lot about his development, it was actually a really nice interview, a lot that I didn't know about how he actually got started with Star Trek. So that was TNG, The Next Generation, in the 80s. It was pretty awesome, the story.
It was a cool story. I did read the transcript. Yeah. I didn't get a chance to watch it, but I did read the transcript.
It was neat.
Outlander Star's Twitter account posted 2 Matt B. Roberts shots this week. So he is a doing pretty good. I guess Outlander Stars is actually enjoying his pictures and using them as well. So his pictures of the day are now becoming the Outlander Stars pictures of the week, if you will. There was one shot of, looks like, cast members. You know, Graham is very prevalent in all of these behind-the-scenes photos. He must have either a lot of downtime. Or he's just on set every day. Maybe that's what it is. But he sure is making the cut on a lot of these. So this was a really interesting behind-the-scenes shot of them all kind of sitting in their little director cast chairs in their totally modern coats with their kilts. And it looks like he has sweatpants on.
Oh, well,
underneath, maybe keeping his legs warm. It looks like he has pants on under his kilt.
But he does, definitely, but he's very tall. You can see he's very, very long-legged here, but stretching out. But it's Dougal
Murta?
And an unnamed or unrecognizable
at this
to me.
Point. Yeah, at this point. But it's a beautiful black and white shot.
Yeah, I like the black and white.
Nice composition. And then he also posted a picture of Claire she's surrounded by herbs, and I'm trying to think, it could be in her surgery, or I don't know, it's a beautiful shot.
Because getting her herbalist on is the caption, and that, I think, it's in her dispensary. Her surgery, yeah.
It's possible. Or but it could be Gaelis's house. That's a dormer window. Gaelis?
I think it's Gaelis. But I think the funniest part was, or the best part was, that it was on set, and it was obviously downtime, because Claire was in whatever her outfit was with a poofy jacket.
I think that they pretty much...
It's just really chilly there, must be.
I think that I just think that they issue every actor their own puffy coat because everyone seems to have one.
Yes.
And you see them on not just Outlander, but most movies when they have like people in downtime, they have actors with their costumes covered in a poofy parka.
Poofy parka.
So the other new picture we got this week from Outlander Stars was another shot of Claire. Looks like they're setting up a shot. Director Brian Kelly.
103, so episode 3.
Episode 3. And she's leaning against some sort of a post with a glass of perhaps Rhenish, perhaps just regular wine, who knows, kind of looking off into the distance. The light's hitting her face weird. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's like I know that it's Katrina, but it's still, it looks like her, but it doesn't look like her. It's strange. It's kind of like that shot from Jamie last week, where it looked like Jamie, but it didn't look like Jamie.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful costuming. Beautiful lighting. So, last but certainly not least... we got a new teaser trailer.
Yes, we did.
And I believe if you had been watching me watch it, I was mostly silent until near the end when I went, beautiful, beautiful, yes! And that was the beautiful, beautiful were the beautiful landscape shots that they had of Scotland, followed by... Jamie taking his blanket off and then that smoldering look they had between them.
I think. His plaid.
Anyway, I don't even know what I just said.
He's a blanket.
Blanket, okay.
Well, he was using his plaid as a blanket, so it looked like a blanket.
It could have been either. It's irrelevant at this point.
No, but we did chat very briefly about people had mentioned as they're walking, the shot where they're walking, because we watched, just full disclosure, we watched the slow motion version as well. And I have read that people were asking what that white strap thing he had on, and Summer said, well, wasn't he
tied his shoulder?
And then there was another shot. I guess it was that shot. No, it wasn't the shot where he took his plate off, but there was a shot where they showed him.
The one where they got face-to-face and they kind of looked at each other.
You could see the shoulder as well. Yeah. So when they're walking down the hallway, which is the same hallway that she and Frank had been walking down, right?
Yes.
She's in front
of... Dude, she walks down the hallway with everybody.
She's a hallway tramp.
That hallway. Just that hallway.
That's that hallway.
She takes everyone down that hallway. Watch that, guys. She'll use you.
So, she's in her white dress-like thingy.
Shift dress.
Yeah. And it's, of course, stained and dirty and everything from everything she's been through. And Jamie is pretty much topless, right? And behind her.
As well he should be.
Well, I don't know if, like, maybe half of his shirt was torn off and you only see the shoulder because... It was, you know what I'm saying, ripped to use to tie everything together. But yeah, so that was neat too. I'm glad you said that because I didn't put that together.
It's all I think about, accuracies. That's a lie.
Okay, it's a lie.
Anyway, so it was, I get very excited every time we get new moving pictures of the cast. So, yay! I can't wait till this is actually released. Though I will say, I do get a kick out of the whole thing ending and then it's just saying summer 2014 because that's my name. And I'm like, it's me 2014. So I like to think that it's just for me, even if it's not.
It's not, but it's okay.
I know. So I will, I would like to have a more specific date as to when they're going to release it. But for now, I'm happy just to see my name summer. associated with the production at pretty much every time it's shown. Anywho, there were a lot of articles this week, new articles. And I think what we've noticed is that as more publications are becoming aware of the Outlander series production being made and it coming to fruition and getting closer and closer to the time that it's being released, there are more and more articles being released. And a lot of them have a lot of the same information. We do link them all to our sites.
We do our best. We do our best to, yes, put them on Facebook or retweet on Twitter or something like that.
Right, but we just can't discuss them all on the podcast. It's just, I think it would be a disservice to do that because, A, we're going to miss some from here to there. And we would not want anyone to...
It's better not to attempt to get everything. If there is brand new information, put it this way. Anything earth-shattering or groundbreaking or brand new that's official, it's going to come from Stars at some point.
Mm.
And that's what we do. We don't talk about a lot of things that a lot of people post. We stick to, on this podcast, in the announcements, we pretty much stick to things that, yes, are on Twitter, but that come from Stars or someone associated with the production or from Facebook Stars or Instagram, that kind of thing. So we try to stick to official or semi-official things, but that have a source or that are sourced from someone with production.
Right, and also we...
It's too much.
It is too much.
There's no way. Things are only going to grow.
I know, but you don't want to keep reporting the same thing over and over again. So, I mean, that bores me, and I'm sure it bores everyone else out there to hear us say, well, he's pretty much saying the same thing that he said in the last interview. But if there's new information, obviously we will try to get it to you. But other than that, we just wanted to... So, as promised, here's part one of our
read-along that never ends.
Of our incredibly long read-along.
We have chapter 24 by The Pricking of My Thumbs. This week we have a friend of the show, I'm sure you're all very familiar with, Lene, who's back again. She's our resident horsey expert, and there is a bit of horsiness in this chapter, so we thought it might be fun to have her
just
back.
Just a little bit of horsiness.
So welcome, Lene.
Thank you.
It's gripping, the horsiness.
It's fun to be here. The horsiness is gripping something else. But,
it's gripping.
Oh, got it.
We'll talk about the gripping later.
Okay.
Yes. So basically, the last chapter ended with them arriving at Liuk, correct?
Well, they did more than arrive at Liuk.
Well, they arrived. They had their little squabble about...
Oh, yeah, the ring.
The ring.
That was pretty big. Okay, and then so she got the ring and they kind
of... The aftermath.
Yes.
The aftermath
so
of
this,
the ring.
Then they had the 50 Shades of Grey encounter.
That's what I'm talking about.
Oh,
the aftermath.
Like, I'm your masterpiece.
Yeah, yes, that was that a very one. 50 Shades of Grey encounter. And
yes,
then,
we're kidding. 50 Shades of Outlander.
Right.
We should, that's what we should have put the title as. So, chapter 24 starts with dinner in the Great Hall, and Gallus and her husband are visiting. The husband isn't doing so well, but they remark that, you know, he doesn't look like he's doing so well, and Gellis remarks he's well enough. Claire and Gellis are chatting, mm-hmm. and she warns Claire of jealous women and to be careful of poison.
Which I find ironic.
From the end of this chapter, I agree.
That's why
she was right.
Yeah. And she's an expert in that, apparently.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. Myrta would be happy because she used the right weapon.
The appropriate weapon.
The appropriate weapon for a woman.
Yeah.
And then she basically asks Claire, is it true about the size of a man's thumbs? And Claire's very clueless. She's like,
okay,
what?
Married ladies, or ladies with significant others.
Oh, just me.
After reading this chapter for the first time, did you notice your man's thumbs?
You know, I had always heard it was the size of guys' feet.
Well, that's
well,
like,
she mentions feet toes.
No, she mentions the great toes.
The great toes.
But again,
I've never heard the thumbs
it's
before.
Foot related. No, not me either. But
like, what I'm saying, did it make you go and notice thumbs more? Because you were like, thumbs, I want to go look at his thumbs and see if it's an indication. I mean, you're already familiar enough with what he's got going on.
I would
so
hope
it's just
so.
A matter
We've been
of
married for
right.
a number of years.
So, shortly into the chapter, a messenger arrives with bad news, and we learn that Dougal's wife, Mora, has died at their estate. And I'm not even going to try. It means blessed.
Who we've never heard of before.
No, but I'm not going to read.
She's never mentioned prior to this.
No.
Except that we know
so,
he's married.
So I feel nothing for the passing of Moore.
Now, they say she had a sudden fever. Later in the chapter, I wonder if it's a sudden fever. I mean, nothing was fishy, they said.
No.
But I just wonder about...
But people back then did die of sudden fevers.
Later in the book, yes. But later in this chapter and later in the book, well, you kind of made...
But you got to think about it. Fevers are indicative of other things. So it's not like somebody just died of a fever.
No, it could be an infection.
The fever is the proof of the infection or the sign of
the body.
Or the sickness or whatever, yeah.
So Dougal leaves to dispose of his wife's property, and Ned Gowan goes with him. So here we have...
Is that a fancy name to dispose of, like, her body?
What?
Well, he has to take care of
her property. I think she brought certain things into the marriage, yeah.
Yeah, and he had to...
He has to dispose of them?
Not dispose of them, but...
Take care of them.
Take care...
Make sure what goes to
whenever somebody dies, you know, you got to divvy things out and make sure everybody gets this and situated.
Yeah, but you would think that... In that time period, anything that comes in the marriage generally goes to the husband.
Not necessarily. In more wealthy families, it can be written to that the female gets certain things.
Or it may go back to her family.
Or it would
husband.
Go back to... Yeah, it depends on the deal they wrote up when they got married.
True. I want to see her marriage agreement.
Yeah.
So we have a number... First of all, hold the horses. Hold the horses. This is... The freaking longest chapter thus far.
Oh my gosh.
It took me 2 days because I'm limited in my time. I can only do it in the evenings. But it took me 2 days of close reading, and both times I was...
Yeah, me too. Because
I almost said sick. I'm not sick. I was so tired at the end of it. I'm just like, I can't anymore.
The first time you read it, you don't think about how long it is because you've never read it before. So you're...
Yeah, an audiobook.
It's all new and an audiobook. Anything
audiobook,
like that.
You don't care.
But when you're
just
reading
listening.
It to take notes and reading it to
goodness.
Like... To make sure you've caught everything and to talk about in a podcast, you're like, oh my gosh, it's just still going and going. When does this end?
You're like,
So the thing about the read-alongs when we do them, it's kind of like an assignment.
It's
like,
fun.
It is
we
fun.
Like
don't
it,
get me wrong.
But don't get me wrong.
You
it's
have
a little bit of work.
You have to understand. I've read this book probably 6 or 7 times.
Me too.
So for me to go back and read it now for like descriptive
detail.
Things and details, it's not tedious.
Not just
I'm
for
not
enjoyment.
Saying it's tedious, but...
It's
not as enjoyable when I'm reading it to remember things as opposed to where I'm just kind of reading it to further
for
the plot.
Enjoyment.
Yeah.
So I'm reading it now so that we can have like an intellectual discussion. Hopefully intellectual.
I don't know how
for
intellectual,
me it was just
but...
like as I was reading I was like I kept thinking, okay, this event has happened in this event. Okay, she's got to end the chapter before the next event happens.
Right.
But no, she just keeps going.
No.
And they span so much there's quite a few weeks. I mean, there's quite a lot large chunk of time that's it spans,
and
which I wasn't
Diana
expecting.
Mentioned a few weeks ago. I don't know if she gave. Well, she didn't give us all the chapter titles, but if I'm not mistaken, on Facebook, which I think she put on Twitter as well, she gave us the section titles, the part like parts 1, part 2, part 3 of Moby.
Mm-hmm.
She gave us the titles.
I don't even touch your Moby posts.
No.
I don't
either.
Even know.
I avoid. And I think it's great that she's sharing. Don't get me wrong, but I avoid Daily Lines like the plague. I don't want to know anything. But to me, it doesn't mean anything to me to see. Chapter title. I mean, it could. Not chapter titles. Part titles.
See, I don't think that she's necessarily giving any big character or story plot points away in her daily lines, but I want to read the whole thing fresh.
Me
like,
too.
I want the whole book to be fresh, so
like
every time I see...
virgin!
Kind of.
Hey!
Only
oh,
with
the
less
wrong
blood
key.
And pain.
Oh my gosh.
I really...
Wait, what did you say?
I'm not going to repeat it. I would like to read it with fresh eyes.
Yeah,
so I don't want any outside influences. I don't want to know anything about Moby going into it.
Okay, let me bring it home. So the reason we went on to that tangent is because about chapter length.
Mm-hmm.
While she did give us part names, if I'm not mistaken, she hasn't given us chapter names unless the one slipped in somewhere. But she did say, and she tweeted about it, that she thought, I had to look it up to see what the word was. But anyway, she gave a title of something and it was very... interesting, and I had to look the word up. And she said making up, I think her hashtag was basically making up chapter titles was the funnest part of finishing the book.
Yeah.
So what this means to me is, and she's already said she writes in chunks, she may write the end before the beginning, before the middle, right? So chapter titles come like almost near the end. So chapter titles can't come until you have a chunk. And that chunk, I'm guessing she chunks it towards the end, too. So I don't think she starts out with this huge title. A huge chapter.
Like, you mean sets it in chapters.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But back to the issue at hand, the long chapter.
Which
I
is
think,
what we're talking about.
I think that the reason this chapter felt as long as it did was there are... She has had long chapters
because it went
past,
on for over 50
minutes. But because most of the long chapters...
I'm sorry.
Most of the long chapters are about a single event.
Ah, and
you're
into it.
And explaining a single event.
And you're into it. And you're
whereas
going.
This one was several large... It,
important
you know, important events.
Events.
So that could have easily been put into two or three chapters.
Yes.
So for them to have made it one really long chapter was sometimes a little like, oh my God, is this chapter still going?
Yeah.
Not because it wasn't interesting.
No, no, no.
It's just,
of course. It was very interesting. Obviously, we love this story, but man.
Okay.
All right.
So we had a number of listeners write in with comments, and a few, and we'll include a few of them. But there's no way. They were long. Two of the listeners who sent in comments and not really questions, but comments. They didn't apologize to us, but they did say, sorry, I guess they said sorry, but they said, this was a long chapter.
Yeah.
And their comments were pages long. And that's fine. We understand.
Well, to be honest, you technically could have just taken one of their comments and used it as your notes.
In this case, we totally could have used either one of their write-ups for their comments, because they pretty much did what we do. Maybe not in as much detail, because I'm a little bit of a... Yep. The German word is pingelig. I guess you would say particular or anal in English. But
I would definitely say anal.
Wow. I would not ever. Speaking of...
He of a high voice.
Oh, my God.
We're going to get to that later. Okay.
Yeah. I can't wait to hear Simon Cowell.
Hold on. We're going to get to that. Stop it.
Callow.
Oh, wow.
I did it again. I can't stop calling him Simon.
But you didn't do it. I did it before.
Cowell. Now I can't say it right.
Okay.
I did it before. You did it wrong off air, and I did it wrong on air.
Oh, I thought I did it wrong the first time on air. Oh, well, there you go. Hello, brain. Normally, we want to use as many reader comments and questions as possible. The problem is, this is already going to be the freaking long... I don't want to split this into two, but we do have a limit on what we can post time-wise on our server, on our host, so this may have to be into two episodes. I don't know, because we want to do it justice.
Yeah.
We don't want to rush it through things. So, we're going to use maybe fewer reader comments than we normally would. Because there's so much going on here that we don't want to miss.
But we will say that most of the readers' comments echo what we're already saying. So
absolutely.
So we appreciated all the listener comments that came in this week.
We loved everything, and you guys
and we agree.
Are a tour de force. You guys, the fact that you came up with so many things and revisited this at
the
all.
The fact that they took the time.
That's what I'm
the
saying.
The time that it would have taken to write the copy. You know how long it takes to write the notes.
Don't.
Trust me. Summer's a slacker. She doesn't take notes. But Ginger takes notes every week, and they're always very long. And this one, especially, is incredibly long.
I'm not going to tell you how long. It's just long.
Okay. As we were. Go
okay.
On.
So, Ned and Dougal have gone off to dispose of his wife's property. And one of the reader's comments, listener comments who wrote in was, this is Mandy from Georgia. And Mandy comments that kind of summarizes it, but says, the death of Dougal's wife is a catalyst for all sorts of things. And that's very true.
That is
more we learn about in this book, and some we learn about in the next book. No,
in the next,
yes. Or even further, yeah.
But it definitely escalated.
Oh, in this.
Escalated,
a lot
especially
of things.
Gellis.
Yeah.
Yes.
Her plot.
Yeah, Gaelis. Yeah.
She definitely escalated what she was doing, because as you could tell, she stated, you know, your husband's not looking so well. He's well enough.
Exactly.
But there was
no urgency at that point.
Anything. But everything did take a drastic turn pretty much very shortly
pretty
after that.
Pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And then we learned that Dougal and Colm had arranged marriages. And Claire is speaking with Jamie, and he says it was also an arrangement between himself and Claire, but he hopes that one day... And he stops there. He kind of, like, trails off. And Claire, she knows where he's going, and he knows where he's going, or leaves unsaid, but it makes her feel
a little uncomfortable. She tries not to encourage him, because she still has in the back of her mind, like, still going
to
leave this guy, and I don't want to encourage him.
But all she's doing is lying to herself.
I know.
Well, at least after the last
But at least she even kind of acknowledges it, though, because she's recognizing
it. She acknowledged it in the last chapter of the whole, like, what does he say to her? Is it usual what's between you and I?
Yeah.
And she says no. You know, she knows it's not. It's not. It's way beyond infatuation.
Yep.
It's not as simple as she thought. It's become way more involved and complex than she first thought it was going to be.
Absolutely. And she says, or she thinks, it was the truth of the statement, what lay between them was more than a business arrangement, that stopped her from reassuring him.
Mm-hmm.
Because she wants to, with her body, with her words.
Yeah.
But because of that, she's like, oh, I can't. Oh,
well,
she still
has Frank in the back of her mind. Like, I still am going to try to get away with it, you know, away back to him.
Exactly. And
She doesn't want to hurt him anymore.
Exactly. That's the point. She has exactly.
to. But she acknowledges that she promised him honesty. So she's still
trying to maintain. That's why she's holding back.
Maintain,
yeah.
Exactly.
Because she's like, I don't want to lie to you.
So I'm just not going to say anything.
Right.
Not encourage him. Not do anything.
Exactly.
Just...
Which is almost more painful for her.
Yeah, I know.
So she says it wasn't simple infatuation between them, and it couldn't be less simple, and it wasn't usual, as you said.
Yeah.
She echoes that again. And she felt she couldn't tell Jamie what she felt for him, and she realized, she believes, and I think she's probably right, if mm-hmm. I almost said something. Oopsie. She believes it would be cruel to do that, to tell him she loves him, and then leave him.
Yeah.
To leave him with that. And old Alec interrupts their kiss and threatens to use the gelding shears on Jamie.
You know, I have to say.
Look, here's the thing, though.
Yeah.
Back to what she just said, that it would be cruel to leave him. I agree that echoing his feelings would be cruel to leave him, but his feelings are there regardless of whether or not she returns them. So it's going to be cruel regardless.
But he also hasn't said that he loves her.
He has. Not in words.
That's what I mean. No, well, neither has she. I mean,
She did
the one time, but it was almost like,
oh, I love you. Like, yeah. You're so funny.
I do
not
love
funny,
you.
But yeah, but you're such a, you know,
it
you silly goose.
It was like an, I don't know, like she wasn't thinking about
yeah.
it. It was just like an offhand comment. It mm-hmm. wasn't really, anyway. Mm-hmm. No, but the whole gelding shears thing threw me off when I was reading this. Because I was like, I have seen horses castrated, and I've never seen any type of shears used on them whatsoever. So I even looked up, I'm like, old gelding shears. Like, I was like, what do these look like?
I was curious. I thought a big, like, these
okay.
No. Choppers.
Okay, you wouldn't need that big. That's ridiculous.
For a horse?
No,
horses don't like aren't this. That big.
They're pretty big.
Yeah, but they wouldn't need, like, gardening shears. And
that's
what you had,
of.
Like, loppers.
I have gardening
no,
shears.
It's like motion with loppers.
What they use with cattle and with horses is they're called emasculators.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And they look like a funky bent pair of pliers, and it clamps off the blood supply
yeah.
and cuts it at the same time.
Oh,
so
Lord.
It crushes it and cuts it, and that way they don't bleed to death or they don't have any major
oh, yeah.
bleeding. And it's not like they just grab them and cut them off.
Yeah.
They make an incision and pop them out and do... Sorry, I shouldn't go into
no,
this
I've
on
seen,
the podcast.
Dear, I've seen...
You're here for a purpose.
I've attended...
Educate. No, educate on the emasculation of horses.
I've attended many a cat and dog
yeah.
spay and neuter.
But they're much smaller than horses.
Popping grapes
no,
out
no.
of a tiny animal is way different than popping like mandarin oranges.
Oh, there are some big dogs. No, granted,
yeah.
they're not horses. But, no, I'm just saying, there's an incision, and they're popped
yeah,
out, literally.
Yeah.
And they're like turned, they're grabbed with like pliers, basically,
mm-hmm.
hemostats or something like that, and then twisted,
yeah.
and they're like tied in a knot,
yeah.
and then plucked off.
Yeah. No,
I want you to know that I'm the
cattle.
Only member of this podcast right now who has only treated testicles with love.
Hey, I never touched them. I just observed.
I'm just saying. I'm the only one who has not emasculated and or damaged testicles
Sorry.
On this entire
I
podcast,
only
right?
watched.
I've only watched horses.
I've never watched horses.
I have steered a lot of cattle. They call it steering them. But
in the right direction.
Because they're a bull until they're a steer. And then you, yeah. So anyway, enough with the animal husbandry.
Okay, so hold on. She says enough, except that
it's coming
when Elena is here. except for her first time, there was a purpose. That was the wedding, which was an animal husbandry. But
yeah, but they
it
really
was kind
but
of a
know,
husbandry.
They
talked about it though.
They masculinated Jamie.
They masculinated.
Oh, there you go.
After,
and no,
to, I have to tell you, my husband cannot not. Giggle when you say the word animal husbandry. He's like, he
that's funny.
He just thinks it's the funniest thing. Anyway.
So yeah, basically whenever Lene visits, it's on purpose.
There will
if
be testicles mentioned.
If it's on purpose, no. If it's on purpose, it's usually because they're either you're traveling with us or a horse.
Has she
issue.
Ever been on accidentally?
No, I'm saying, sorry, discussion about animal husbandry would be on purpose because it's planned like this chapter.
Yeah.
Specifically,
though technically we are animals and they were married, and that was
okay.
Also
let's
technically
go on.
Animal
okay.
husbandry.
So he threatens to use gelding shears on Jamie, and he tells Claire to go back to the castle, or Jamie tells Claire to go back to the castle, and he'd find her when he was done helping Alec. And then he whispers to Claire, "The stables when the sun's mid sky." So basically, come back and meet me.
Clip, scene, cut. To the
hayloft. Exactly. They set up their next assignation.
Yeah.
So they're up in the hayloft, literally, afterwards, and Hamish is walking through the stable. And before we go on with what happens,
actually, I love this whole scene.
Oh,
I really hope they keep this in the show.
I do too. But our listener made a really good point.
Yes, and I'm going to read it. I'm going to read it. This is from Mandy again. Mandy writes, "Stables, And then she said, "The only thing driving me slightly crazy about..."
That's not what I was going to talk about.
What was it?
We could talk about that, but that's not what I was going to mention.
What is it?
How she mentioned about, and it was the same, I think it was still Mandy, mentioned about the fact that he very quickly puts on his kilt. And I think that everyone's pointed out how you cannot quickly put a kilt on.
Well, can't you, like, drape it and wrap it around you like a...
I don't know if he put it on or if he just, like, covered himself.
Like, I don't know. Because everything that I've ever seen about putting a kilt on includes, like, you have to... You have to
fold it, roll it,
put it over your shoulder like it's an ordeal. So for him to quickly roll up in his kilt, I'm like, I don't know how you can quickly do that. Unless he was still in it and he just threw it over. Like if he just, I have no idea what they're going to do there.
So I thought it was weird. I remember.
Or maybe he just lifts his kilt.
That's true.
I mean, that would be effective for the purpose, but I think he was, you know, taking his time with his lady, so that's why he took the whole thing off, perhaps.
Yeah.
But he does put it on quite quickly to run down the stairs, so I'm wondering if they're going to do it, like, real time and have it take him, like, 15 minutes before he goes downstairs and stops him from getting the horse out of the stable.
He would be dead by then.
Or if...
Yeah.
Or if they're going to have him, like, fast forward. Okay. Anyway, on to the stables.
So Mandy writes... "Stables, oomph. The only thing driving me slightly crazy about the Starz production is when I read the description of the Leek stables and then see what they built at Dune. I don't get how you go from no windows to open air. It's a nitpicky detail, and I mostly keep it to myself." Well, sorry, Mandy.
You've got a friend in me.
You haven't kept it to yourself any longer.
No, you told the wrong people and you want to keep it to yourself.
You've got a friend in me because I'm totally nitpicky about it, too. So
just for the record, here is how it is described in the book. "Stone-floored and stone-walled, the only openings were the narrow windows at one end, the door at the other, and the narrow slits under the thick thatched roof intended for the convenience of the owls who kept down the mice in the hay."
And the reason why it bothers me not isn't so much for this scene. It's for the scene when Claire is at the castle the first time and she tries to escape at night.
Yeah.
And she walks into the stables and it's pitch black. Because the doors are shut.
I
know. And because the doors are shut.
Yeah.
And she steps on him. How do you not see somebody when there's like moonlight and coming through and there's, you know, no walls? I mean, to me, it just doesn't. But maybe they will completely revamp it and have the scene in a different spot or something. I don't know.
Well, what I will say about being out in like the country, like places.
It's dark when it's dark.
It's dark when it's dark. And if it's not a full moon, it's dark when it's
dark.
Like, you would not be able to see. So, in their defense on that point, I do think that it would be dark enough for them to not, for her to not be able to see him. However, when we have a very clear-cut description of the stables as being stone-walled and stone-floored.
They're probably honestly just trying to save money.
Because Dune is already there.
Dune is already there, and they kind of have it in the background because they've shown the stables kind of off away from the castle. And so they kind of have it in the background of where the stables are. And it's kind of like maybe they, you know, they couldn't find a building or it would have been not cost-effective to build a stone
tower. Maybe they needed it in the same shot somehow.
Or it makes me wonder if they did further research and found out that that would have been a more accurate depiction of a stable of that time period. Now,
maybe
I like to think Diana would have done that on her own. However, maybe they found that in that time period, maybe an open-air stable was more accurate.
I don't know.
But we'll have to wait and see. Maybe if we ever get to talk to Diana and or Ron Moore on our show, we can ask them.
We'll have to make notes and write these things down.
So Jamie notices that young Hamish is going for donuts, and he quickly gets dressed. And this is what you were saying. How can he quickly put a kilt on? But whatever he did it quickly enough to save his life and
we'll
stops
see.
Him from getting to the horse.
We'll see how Sam quickly does it.
And he speaks with Hamish, and he finds out that Hamish was with the other lads riding his pony and competing and jumping over obstacles. And his pony had stopped in front of whatever it is they were jumping over.
The stone walls that they jump over.
And Hamish had been thrown over the pony's head.
So they'll probably be
which I have had happen to me, and it's not fun.
They'll probably be open air walls now.
As opposed
to stone walls.
Stone walls. Stop.
So his pride was definitely damaged, and he wanted to come out on a proper horse. So he tells Jamie that his pride was damaged, and he wanted to come out on a proper horse. And Jamie's like, yeah, no, not Donis.
Well, so, I just like the whole scene that she sets up with like Haymitch going up to the stall and like Donis is already like slipped kicking out. The stall and squealing and throwing his head out and baring his teeth at him. And I've met horses like that.
He's still going
to
do it.
And he's snapping his teeth and he kind of stops.
Yeah.
And Jamie goes over and kind of stands next to Donis, but just out of reach. He knows he's like in a safe spot. And the horse is like literally snapping his teeth, trying to get a hold of Jamie's shoulder. And you're just like, seriously? This kid really thought? He's like this little pipsqueak, and he thought he was going to try to do that. It's hilarious. I just think it's very cute.
It is. I hope they do. They have to do this scene.
It's so sweet.
It's very sweet. And so Jamie tells Kovar, I believe that's the way you would pronounce it, which means foam, tells him that Kovar is a better horse for him. Much more, it's a gelding, and much more,
Mellow.
He said Donis is too dangerous, and he encourages him to go close enough so that Kovar can smell him. Now, Lene can tell us, I know this is a big number, but Lene can tell us exactly what this means. So it says Kovar is a 14-hand, good-tempered gelding.
14 hands is 4 inches. Each hand is 4 inches.
So that's
how you would measure a horse. You'd put your hands side by side, because a hand is almost generally about 4 inches wide, the average hand. So that's how they used to measure them. They kind of and you'd measure them from their front, basically from the ground up to their withers, which is the base of their neck. That's how tall a horse is right at their withers. That's
so not the head and not the back.
Not the head, not like jazz hands. No, not jazz hands. But it's 4 inches.
Square fingers?
No.
Okay. And 14 hands is not a large horse. It's actually a fairly small horse. That's the size of like a cow pony or something like that, or a quarter horse, general quarter horse. The horses I ride, the thoroughbreds, are all a lot taller.
So, horsey question. If a horse is gelded. If a horse is gelded at a certain age before it reaches maturity, will it then kind of not grow much?
Generally, they continue to grow. Certain horses are gelded. It depends on their breed. The Frisians, I know for sure they geld them. They wait till they're like 2 years old till they geld them, because they want to see if they're going to be a good producer, if they could use them as a stud. And if not, they geld them and they sell them. So, and they'll, sell them to somebody. But they always, when you geld them, they always get a better temper. It mellows them.
Oh, absolutely.
Everything like that. So,
that's because they're emasculated. They're like, go ahead and ride me. I have nothing else to do.
Well, there's...
That sounds like Eeyore.
Look like Eeyore.
I've known some nasty geldings, too. They're just as... And I'm sure there are plenty of great stallions out there that are super easy to handle.
There are some nasty mares.
There are some very nasty mares. But
that's
they
all
have
I can
at
say.
Least an excuse. Because, they do go
into... They still get all
they
their...
They still cycle.
They still get all their...
Although my friend's horse, when she goes into cycle, she turns into this like love bug and loves everybody. And she's like,
that's because she's trying to get loving.
She sees the boy horses and she stops and she looks back and like lifts her tail at him.
Oh lordy!
She
flashes them.
Oh yeah, she flashes.
Wait, did you just say she squirts at them?
Yeah, they squirt out. They squirt out like a liquid that has pheromones and stuff in it. It's like urine and stuff like that.
No, I just didn't know horses.
And they
squirted.
Wink. They like wink their vulva.
Oh, wow.
I do that, too. You just can't see it through the clothes.
Everybody's getting a good animal surgery class.
Oh, my Lord. Shock on Ginger's face right now.
So, yes.
I can't believe, I'm red-faced, but I don't know what I'm more shocked over. The winking vulva that Lene's talking about, or the fact that Summer takes part in that.
I don't know.
We're all animals.
Keep it to yourself.
We all wink.
It's all good.
I do.
Let's go past all of the detailed horse mating behavior.
Do we have to censor this episode?
I'm hoping not. Just
do we have to put it like warning? We discuss animal husbandry in this episode.
Animal husbandry, I think, is educational and safe. No, safe. I don't know why I said safe. It's a safe topic. Meaning, it's educational. We're not talking about. We're not giving a lecture on human sexuality. We're talking about animal husbandry
and that behavior.
And it is kind of scientific, and it's natural, but and we're not getting down and dirty with it. The two cousins eat apples. They feed the apples to the horses too, and they eat apples together. And Haymitch says that his dad was a great rider before he couldn't. He says that Rupert told him that his cousin Jamie, had to get married, and Jamie corrects him and says that he wanted to marry. Haymitch asks him, do you mind getting into bed each night with a lady? And Jamie says, no, it's very pleasant. But Haymitch is not that convinced. But he notes that Claire does look soft and nicer to sleep with than the other, you know, gawky, bony girls.
Yeah, that he talks about his age. All the girls I know are built, have like sticks. They look like sticks or something like that. I forget how
this whole conversation is so adorable.
It is. It's very
so adorable.
And Claire is just losing her shiz.
She's trying not to laugh in the loft. That he's there, yeah.
And Hamish asks him how he'd know which woman was the right to marry, and Jamie notices that Hamish has no shoes on. And that's, he's like, you know, you better not have lost him again. And Hamish, embarrassed, said that says that John the stable lad told him, you just serve the last like a stallion doesn't mare, and I didn't believe him, but is it true? And he said this, like, and Diane had a whole sentence, like, with dashes through. You know, he comes out in one breath.
Yeah, he's trying really to say fast. It as fast as he can because he wants to get it out because he wants an answer.
Well, he's also embarrassed.
I think he also doesn't want to say it.
Claire's trying very hard not to laugh.
And so is Jamie.
And Jamie just tells the truth. He says, yes, you do. And Hamish looks at the horse and then in his own lap.
Well, no, you have to say, like, the horse was hanging. You know, horses, when they're, male horses, when they're relaxed.
They said that?
They say that.
No, I mean, did the chapter say
yes,
that?
Yes, it says about a
I
foot.
I am so not.
It says Hamish looks at a horse which is relaxed and about a foot if his reproductive equipment is hanging out. And
it said that?
Yes.
Oh, Diana, I apologize.
And
oh, I'm so embarrassed.
I promise I read. It was like my husband's first reaction to when he saw a horse.
Okay, wow. All I knew was when you said it. It's like my husband.
No, wait. Okay. No, the first time he saw a horse hanging like that, he was like, oh my, what is that, Lene? What is that? I'm like, what do you think it is?
Here's the thing. When I was in high school, we took a choir trip that we went to medieval times. Oh, yeah. And they have all of the horse stables, like, downstairs, and they have glass walls so that you can see horses in their stables. You know, kind of look at them, and you're like, oh, look at the pretty horses.
Really?
And while we were standing, I think me and my friend were just standing there having a conversation next to the glass wall of that horse stable. And while we're standing there, this horse proceeds to get the most gigantic erection I have ever seen in my entire life. Like, it was huge, and it was, like, moving of its own volition. Like, it looked like it had a mind of its own. It was... Yeah. And, I mean, I think we were so red-faced. I was like, it didn't make sense to me that that's what that was.
But see, the thing is, stallions, they don't have to be a stallion to get an erection. They can be a gelding and have an erection.
Yeah.
Because they don't lose the ability to...
The musculature or the blood flow.
Or the blood flow.
Yeah.
So I've known many geldings that still enjoy it. Like, they still, like, get one from time to time. It's pretty funny.
It was jarring.
And that's what was so funny about... That's what I thought was so funny is because Hamish looks at the horse and sees his reproductive equipment hanging so low. And then he looks in his own lap, like, comparing the two, like...
There's no way!
What am I going to do? And, like, Claire's up in the loft trying so... She's, like, stuffing stuff in her mouth trying not to laugh.
I hope they have to have this scene.
I hope so.
Oh, my gosh.
No, because... Jamie's like, it's a little different. It's not quite as violent.
Yes.
You know, it's more gentle.
It can be.
And Hamish says, so you don't have to bite him on the neck? And I'm like, to keep him from moving around?
Uh-huh.
But, well, he even says, well... It doesn't... What does he say? Not that it can be like that, but usually it's not. He makes some kind of comment that's
He said, oh, and then he asks him about... Well, he didn't necessarily ask him about the position, but Jamie said it can also be
done face to face. As a lady prefers.
Which he only just found out a couple of weeks ago.
A month ago.
He's enlightening this little boy, and he's like...
Sharing the knowledge. Way to go, Jamie.
Good.
Way to help the future generation.
So Hamish said he'd rather do it from the back.
Yeah, he doesn't want...
he just doesn't want anyone looking at him while he did that. And Jamie, Claire is entertained, but Jamie is probably dying, and he's trying not to hard.
Because they're both...
Trying hard not to laugh.
Yeah. Well, they're both totally red-faced, because they're both redheads, right? Isn't Hamish a redhead, too, right?
Yes.
And so their face is
the
red.
Just
the red. Yeah.
He's his daddy.
Yeah.
I think the scene
is just so adorable.
It's adorable. So Mandy also shares, she says, Jamie and Hamish, love, love, love this scene. A foreshadowing of what a wonderful father.
You left the best line out.
Jamie will be. What is that?
That he says, is it hard to keep from laughing?
Oh, yeah. Hamish does say that. Is it hard to keep from laughing?
Oh, during it.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah, like while you're doing the job kind of thing?
Sometimes it is.
Sometimes.
And another listener, Outlander fan and listener, Honey in Costa Rica, says, Jamie and Claire have been oomphing in the hayloft when Hamish comes to the stables and heads for Donis' stable. And Jamie wraps the kilt around him. Ha! He's like, I can't help thinking about Ron Moore's comments at the LA fan event about how long it takes to get dressed.
Yes.
And jumps down. She says, bare-chested? I mean, I guess so.
Well, they mention him being bare-chested, I think.
Yeah, I think they do.
And to head off Hamish, who announces he's going to ride Donis, which means demon. I don't know.
And he has a red horse, too.
Yes.
They call them chestnuts or sorrels or... Yeah. There's many different names to describe them. But
remember, not about the horse. You can't forget about the horse. But I misremembered until my reread this summer, that I just assumed in my memory that he was black. Because that would make perfect sense, you know, black demon, all that, but no.
Well, there is a conversation later in this chapter that mentions
that color. Okay. Jamie's talk with Wee Hamish about the birds and the bees, which she marks on that, and she says, but Jamie shows, and this is, I thought this is very true, and we all agree with you, Connie, I believe. Jamie shows great respect to his young cousin Hamish. He takes him seriously, even though Hamish is a child, and he respects his dignity. He also declines to rat out Hamish to Colm when Hamish's carelessness leads to Cover being chased by a pack of dogs, which is coming.
Oh, yeah, that's coming. Yeah.
How old is Hamish?
I want to say 8 or 9.
Yeah, I think so.
Something like that?
I think 8 or 9. Old enough that, I mean, he probably started writing pretty young because, I mean, they did back then.
It's like I read this whole conversation he's having with Hamish, and he says, we Hamish. And when I think we, I think like really tiny, like a little small kid. Mm-hmm. My daughter's 5, and I can't imagine explaining any of these things to my daughter right now.
But
like, not in this
kind of
detail.
But think about having, like, my son Vince. Think if he was a year or two older than where he is now, and the way he thinks about things.
He would ask
and how
questions.
He is, like, when he's interested in something, he wants to know the specifics of it.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's the same thing. I think it's just not only a boy-girl thing, but it's a personality thing, too. He could just be one of those kids that's a thinker and just wants to know. And something like that, that's kind of freak a kid out. And, you know, a boy especially is going to worry about, oh my gosh, I have to do this to a woman someday, you know?
Sorry, that's
and
it's still...
And then when
makes
they're
that, me giggle.
When they're that little and they don't understand,
they don't
they're
understand,
that young,
no.
They don't understand why
they
you
still,
even need to do that.
They still think girls are icky.
I know.
They're like, why would I ever want to do that?
Especially looking at her.
I know.
Okay, so back at the castle, we learn that Claire...
No, it wasn't him looking at her. It was her looking at him.
He was more concerned
about somebody watching him than he was about seeing the other person anyway. Go ahead.
So back at the castle, we learn that Claire has been welcomed by most of the married and older women, but the young girls were resentful that she had taken Jamie out of circulation. And those are Diane's
words.
And
they kind of whisper about her and turn away and like everything.
And she's known as Mistress Fraser, and the women are eyeing her waistline. Which makes perfect sense, because a woman's job in those days, highborn or low, was to have babies.
Children.
And we'll raise them, but have babies first. Claire hadn't even thought about conceiving when she'd married Jamie, but when her period came, she was relieved. She's like, it's complicated enough without introducing a baby into this kind of situation. And Jamie was also said he was relieved, but she thinks he may have felt a twinge of regret.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's really good with kids.
Yeah, he's Hamish.
Well, and he was a man of the time,
and he wanted to prove
his virility.
Not only prove his virility, but to have somebody, you know, to pass your name
that
down to.
It's true, and he's kind of. I also think he had to leave his family.
Yes.
So I think he's also wants to start his own so he could
have
more
like,
of a family.
Yeah.
Like his family now is obviously Claire, but he'd like to have more.
Yeah.
We learned that the washing of the clothes was done in bits, so in pieces. So with a basin and a ewer, or outside, in the lock, or on a stone, or a stone-floored chamber off the garden, where the women would stand naked and let friends, not fiends, as I wrote, and let friends throw buckets of water over them. And I just had this image of, like, little boys or whatever trying to peek through into the garden when the women were being washed.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, I mean, most, you'd have a basin and a ewer, and you just, you know, sponge baths is what
exactly,
a lot of people did.
Exactly. And Jamie had bathed in the lock, and...
Not on purpose.
He was forced to.
Not
because
on purpose.
Oh, sorry.
He comes in sopping wet, and Claire's like, did you have a bath? And that's what brought up the whole conversation, is because she's like, where would you... She was sitting there racking her brain, like, where would he have taken a bath?
he says that someone had left the stall door open and the stable door, and Cover had gone swimming.
Are you Irish?
Dar.
And the stable door.
I go from being a non-native English speaker of American English.
Dar.
To a Scottish lilt to an Irish or pirate lilt. So I honestly, I don't know. And Cover, the horse that I guess was given to Hamish, or that Hamish was going to ride, had gone swimming in the night. And he liked water plants, and he was chased in, he could get out, so he went. And he liked water plants, so he was down by the lock, eating them.
When
the pack of dogs comes. So when the pack of dogs comes, you know, they chase him into the lock, and he kind of, you know, swims away, and he's relatively safe. And Jamie, though, had to go in after him. Jamie scared the dogs away, and he had to go in after him. And he blames Hamish for the stall and stable doors, and that makes sense. And to punish him, Jamie says he's going to row him out into the middle of the lock before supper, and then dump him overboard and have him swim back. And by the time he gets back, it'll be
his turn to miss supper.
Miss supper, because Jamie missed supper. Jamie says, Claire is so nice to crudle with. And I thought, what the heck? Crudle, I looked it up. And it says to make a low murmuring sound. I thought that was sweet.
Crudle. That reminds me of doves. Like,
oh, well,
the doves, like,
no, that's just, that was like that a, was
a cat.
That was like a cat.
Cat.
Was like a
okay,
cat
I hang around cats pretty much all the time. Well, at home, so sorry. My if my default is purr.
If a cat and a dove had a baby, that's what you just did.
There you go. Okay. They both smell something tangy and herbal in their bedroom, and Claire finds under her pillow a small bundle of plants that were tied together with black thread. And she picks it up and pricks herself. It had thorns on it. And we find out that it was one flower. It was a crushed primrose. Now, because Diana chose this flower, I thought, you know, is there any significance to it? I looked it up. What I could find in a number of sources was that it signified womanhood and, quote unquote, I can't live without you flower. So, which I thought was interesting, because if it's something is an ill wish, obviously you wish someone ill. Mm-hmm. It's a negative type of thing. A womanhood, I could see if it's part of something negative, you want it to embody, if it's towards
that's
a woman.
The black thread. I'm sure the black thread
I think the black thread is the negative.
Portion of it.
And the fact that it was a woman.
The womanhood embodied was.
Yes.
Was,
so probably I can't live without you is not part of it.
Well, I think that what it is the primrose is the womanhood.
Yes.
It's supposed to be representative of Claire.
That's what I mean.
And then the black thread is the negative, whatever.
Yeah.
And
so
the binding of whatever else they put in there.
There were other herbs and things like that.
And Jamie looks at it and then walks across the room and throws it out the window. I mean, he's quick about it.
Yeah.
And for someone who doesn't believe in these things, and he may, strict Catholic that he is, he may truly not be all that superstitious, but a lot of people who may not be superstitious, respect things.
Well, what comes up later this chapter is more
evidence
of the superstitious nature of
the time.
Time.
Exactly. And so what he's basically, we'll find out later, and he, and Galus later too, is like, whatever the heck you feel, don't meet a diddle squat. It matters what the others around are perceiving,
mm-hmm.
because that's what's going to get you in trouble.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. So Jamie gets rid of it, and Claire asks him what it is, and he says, it's a joke, I reckon. A nasty one, but only a joke. And that, of course, was the ill wish.
Mm-hmm.
So Claire wakes up, I think the next morning or in the night, and she's dreaming of butterflies. I keep thinking, butterfly kisses!
Okay, yes.
Stop.
Not.
Butterfly kisses on her body. Butterflies kissing her body, and only to find Jamie in Leekdoon.
You just did that.
I did. Hey, she did it first. It was on accident. First time. It was like episode, I don't know what.
But to be honest, every time I do say Leek, I still think of it's a southern person saying Lick.
I know.
Leek.
Well, that's
I'm
why
all Leek.
Dude. I'm all Leek. Dude.
I'm all Leek. Dude.
Exactly.
That's
so,
funny.
Jamie asks for her company later that evening, and she says yes. As Jamie leaves, he's singing a ditty or a song, Up Among the Heather. And we learn that he is basically tone deaf.
Yeah.
Which is a theme that's carried out forever in all the books.
Yeah.
She's nothing if not consistent, Diana.
Yeah.
That's true.
That's something
his owly wing
she
and his tone
definitely
deafness.
Carries through the entire series.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So he doesn't magically have a singing voice in book 7.
And so, Sam, you, if you can sing, you better learn how not to.
I gotta say, it is hard. Okay, I can kind of sing. Summer can kind of sing. And just so happens that Lene can kind of sing. And I don't know about you ladies, but if I try to sound bad, and I'm not saying I'm God's gift to singers, but if I try to sound bad, I end up...
Sounding bad.
No, I mean, I sound like I'm trying to sound bad. It's like, I can't fake it very well.
Then you're obviously not faking it with Happy Birthday.
No, but the
because that's the easiest song to make sound awful.
Well, you just choose a different key
than everyone else.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. That's, no, it's easy to sing off.
Bad?
Because I used to...
The keys I can do.
No, we used to sing, like, in the jazz choirs, and they were all really good singers, and... We would hit those, I forget what you call them,
I don't know, but that was a jazz hand thing.
Jazz hand notes. She's making jazz hands.
I don't know what you call it. There's a certain term. Yeah, there's a term in jazz where at certain points you'd all like kind of hit a different note on purpose to make it sound like, wah, you know, and I forget what it's called. There's a term. There were certain songs we would sing where you'd be singing and then, wah, and... Anyway.
I know what you're talking about,
though. And it was easy for us all to sing on a different note. Because we just all, like,
because then everyone just goes flat and or sharp.
It was, anyway.
Girl, no one pick a real note. Everyone go flat or sharp.
And everybody could. Nobody ever picked the same note. So, anyway.
Okay, so Claire goes down for breakfast and watches faces to see who may have pulled a trick on her. So she's now
I don't even know
aware.
Why she's looking. She knows exactly who
I know.
Did it.
She knows who
There's
did.
Only
she...
one person who would have done it, and we all know who that is.
And can I say... Whatever, no. That Richard Clark was pimping Leghorn. What was that about?
He got many people responded back to him, and he was like, "She's so misunderstood." And we're like, "You're not reading the books right, buddy." And I think everyone who responded to him was like,
"You're
negative.
An idiot. You're an idiot."
But I didn't read it. But I saw his next tweet was like, "Wow, there's a few fans out there who
hate her with a vengeance."
Yeah. A few. Pretty much, you know, here's the thing about
I mean, I
don't
know,
I can't talk about it because it would give too much away.
I know!
There's too many spoilers.
I'm just saying, whatever you think of her, it gets worse.
Well, here's the thing. Here's what I will say about her. The things that she does in this book, I can forgive because she was a girl of 16.
Yes.
What she does in future books
no
will never be okay.
No.
Regardless of the time and trying to get myself in that mindset,
I can't forgive her for what she does in this book either. Because, like...
She
knew what the consequences would be.
Yeah, that's the whole point.
Well, which we can go into it further in the chapter.
Yeah.
So, but anyway.
So
she's looking for somebody.
And she notes that people have been coming to her more and more for her illnesses. For their illnesses. Yeah. And Claire describes her dispensary as clean and orderly and all of these beautiful description of just how everything is and it's stacked and nice and the contents. And she realizes that she was content. And despite the uncertainties of her life, she's happy. And then she feels guilty.
And then that sets her off and she starts freaking out,
freaking
herself out.
Exactly. Like
she's like, how can I feel happy? How can I feel happy?
Isn't that when she starts?
No, that's later on. Okay. Watch out, that girl. So,
and she worries about what Frank must be doing. And if time goes on the same as it does here, then, which it only makes sense that it would, then it'd be about 4 months, right?
Yeah.
And that, like, Frank must have given up hope of finding her alive and must be just looking for her dead body and like all these horrible things she's going through her mind.
Well, he never finds it.
It's true.
Her dead body.
Well,
so he never has
she's not
closure,
there.
Really.
So she knows she must make a decision soon. Whether that is to give up her life with Frank for good and just kiss her goodbye or to leave Jamie and stay with Jamie. Or to leave Jamie and go back. She's still in this in-between thing right now.
She realizes, I think from what I gathered from what Diana wrote, it's kind of like she's been kind of putting off having to think about it.
Having to make the decision.
She's been just kind of going about her day-to-day routine and not try to think about the fact that she really should be trying to come up with some sort of a plan to get her back to Frank. And that's like when the guilt really starts sinking in, like, oh my gosh, what am I still doing here then? So... Anyway,
she probably relishes the fact that she doesn't have a lot of free time. Because I think the free time lends itself to the guilt.
And she realizes that she's happy. And regardless of her thing about Frank or thing about Jamie, she's happy being a healer and helping people.
Happy and content are two different things.
She says she's happy.
Okay.
She does. She says she's content. And then
she
the more she thinks about it,
she
says she's happy.
And then, as she's going through this in her mind, Jamie comes in, supported by old Alec and a stable lad.
and he's straining with his foot. So he's
sprained his ankle.
He had fallen off of Donis. A bee, he was riding him, and a bee stung him, and he, quote, acted like he'd been struck with an elf dart. I want to know, what exactly, and I know he means, like, the little people or whatever, but the, an elf dart.
I would imagine it feels
like a magical,
a
painful
lot
dart.
Like a bee sting.
Yeah. Okay. So he went straight up on all fours, came down, and then went mad.
That's called crow hopping, by the way. When horses go, literally leap up off all fours like that, it's called crow hopping. Oh. And they can literally, I've been on them when they do that, they like bounce up off all fours. Like,
like
it's like the bucking broncos. Like if you see them, they hunch their back and they throw their head down. And they're not bucking per se.
Yeah, yeah.
They're literally just hopping on all 4 feet. It's called crow hopping.
Is it scary?
Oh, yeah. It can be.
Did that horse I was riding?
Oh, remember we were riding together.
Did he
crow hopped and he bucked you? Yeah. No, but remember when I took you riding?
I was determined to stay on that horse.
She did.
There was no way I was going to be able to remount that without help because it was too tall.
She stayed on that horse. No, the time that you rode with me at Beach Lake.
Yes.
And the horse I was riding she got stung by a bee when we were out there.
Yeah.
Remember, all of a sudden she like spun. Bella spun and she started kind of snorting and like dancing around and that set off Kid and you're like, what's going on with your horse? And I was like, I think she just got stung because everything was in bloom. It was springtime, so there were bees just flying back and forth, just flying all over. And I'm like, let's hurry and get through the fields and
it
get away from all the bees.
It was tall though. I mean,
yeah,
it was a really tall field.
It was out beer. By like a bunch of ag fields, and they had been planted, and everything was blooming,
and fresh,
and
everything. Oh, wow.
And so, yeah. I mean, I've seen horses go nuts when they get stung.
Well,
or get bitten
hurts.
By horse flies, which
horse
flies hurt like a bee sting, too.
Oh, yeah.
And when they get stung, I've seen them just literally almost try to flip over backwards in a.
So he crow hopped.
And then went nuts.
Yes.
Bucking and
Jamie was
off.
Somehow able to stay on at least for a little bit,
yeah.
And then until Donis went over the fence, and then. Donis took off and Jamie fell off and
very athletic horse,
his ankle.
By the way.
Yeah.
As someone who's been involved in a horse that's done stuff like that, it's very painful. And I think that I had bruises from like mid thigh on one thigh all the way up to like the crotchal region, all the way down to mid thigh on the other thigh.
Yeah.
Just bruises from being like battered and thrown into the saddle.
There are saddles back then. It's hard to see the saddles in the pictures that I've seen online. To see what they really look like.
Saddles will be authentic.
I'm curious because
somewhat authentic.
Some saddles
they may have been
more
dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, some of them could have just been
simple,
like either a blanket or like a piece of leather, more like an English saddle, more simplified than a Western saddle.
Is it the pommel?
Yeah, the pommel is
that's
the
Western,
saddle horn.
Right?
Well, there's
anything?
A pommel. There's a pommel that's considered
anyone?
The pommel is the front of the saddle in English or Western. But there's a saddle horn on Western roping saddles, right? Which obviously they wouldn't have. I won't think a saddle.
No,
some of them did come up to some sort of either a crest or like kind of a squared kind of rounded thing that would fit between your legs,
which would still hurt if you were thrown into.
Well,
it.
Yeah, and you land on it.
Assume since he's breaking horses, it's a very small saddle because you don't go throwing a large saddle onto a horse that's never had a saddle.
Something as light as possible.
Yeah, when
you grow.
Yeah, you use
your
smallest, lightest blankets and stuff to really get him used to it first. And if this is the first go around, it wouldn't be a big saddle to give you much to hold on to.
So Jamie has a sprained ankle, and he tells Claire how it happened. And since he had help bring him up to the dispensary or to her surgery, Alec tells Jamie he can have the next day off. Well, that day too, but the next day off. So Claire spends the next morning ministering Jamie. And they go up to the roof for some fresh air because she thinks, you know, which is kind of weird because, like, here he is trying to, like, watch his ankle.
It was his idea to go up to the roof. And she even comments, like, oh, yeah, that's a great idea. Let's climb six flights of stairs with you in your state. But
dude,
he's like, I want to show you.
You can barely talk me into walking up one flight of stairs to get to my office. With regular undamaged ankles. I can't imagine having strained / sprained ankle and walking up the same.
And when they're up on the roof, they're looking at the view, and Jamie points out the way to Lallybroch. He says it's the notch between two creeks. Jamie's been thinking of his home, and he says that he thinks they must go back at some point, and tells her that, you know, you'd be Lady of Broch Tuorach. And he says that sometime after the Duke has come, they might go. And she wants to tell Jamie something, but asks him to promise her that he won't ask her how she knows. And he's like, we already had this arrangement. I won't ask you if it's something you can't tell me. But sure, I promise. And she says that the Duke of Sandringham is not to be trusted. And he actually asks her, what do you mean? Which I thought was funny, because he just said I wouldn't ask you why. But she knows that there's something very wrong about him, and that's all she can say. And Jamie knows this, or he assumes he does, and he knows something about the Duke.
Well, and he's like, how do you know?
Exactly, how do you know this? And she was like, what? Mm-hmm. And Mandy writes, the Duke of Sandringham, I think this is one of Claire's first bits of quote-unquote prophecy. Mm-hmm. Right? Where she tries to share her knowledge of the future with someone in the past, albeit very obliquely. So mm-hmm. not really telling him exactly everything. And Connie writes, Claire tries to tell Jamie about the Duke, but what she's trying to tell him, which is about the Jacobite connection, and what Jamie says he knows, the Duke's sexual proclivities, are actually two different points of info about the Duke. So they're like, I'm going to tell you something. Yeah, what do you know? Don't trust him. You know about him? How do you know about him? It's like totally wires crossed, and it's just, mm-hmm. That's a funny, I mean, it won't be funny when, well, I guess
it's not the same wrong that she's thinking of. There's exactly. There's something wrong with him, and he's thinking or a different kind of wrong.
Yeah.
Well, she's thinking suspicious. There's something
he knows
not
the Duke,
to be trusted.
He knows the Duke on a completely different level.
You know,
than Claire knows. And that's what's so interesting about this story is that when you go to, like, Frank speaking of his ancestors, he speaks to them, he speaks of them in such a way because without real knowledge of them. Mm-hmm. Like, he has the overview of their life, and he sees...
It's romanticized.
Right. That's the mm-hmm. thing about history. Mm-hmm. History gets romanticized. But when you go back and you're part of history, you see that they are not romanticized people. They are real people, and they have real flaws. And that's part of what's interesting about the Duke of Sandringham is she comes at him and says, well, I know these broad stroke historical mm-hmm. accurate facts. Mm-hmm. However, she doesn't know all of the little nitty-gritty things that make him the person
or
that he is.
Young boys. Okay. So we learned that the Duke had visited...
previously.
Leek when Jamie was 16, when he was still staying there, just before he left. And there was suspicion still, potentially, that Jamie was Hamish's father. And she asks if he left because of Letitia. And Jamie's startled and Claire lets go of the tiny bit of suspicion that she realized she had held on to. She says she'd never believed it.
Well, he's like, why would I... He's like, yeah. I've only ever met her, like, once or twice, and, like, I really have never...
He's like, I'd have those kind of balls.
Yeah.
Also,
I am not that...
Also, he obviously came to their wedding bed a virgin.
Mm-hmm. Because he thought it was done.
Well, the difference between men and women is guys can say they're a virgin, and
that's
you would
true.
Have no idea if they were
that's
or
true.
Not. But, I mean, it's obvious to her, he was very inexperienced, obviously.
Right, but where does the man profit pretending to not know what he's doing?
Yeah.
There's no profit in that.
She tells him what Gilas had said, and Jamie laughs. He's like, no way. But he does say that Gilas is a troublemaker and a gossip, if not a witch.
But Claire should have already known all of those things.
Yes.
Yeah.
So as they're making their way down from the roof, they hear the sound of dogs barking. And they look out and they see that these dogs are pursuing Father Bane, who is the village priest. And he ends up falling into the mud. And
they
knock him down into the mud. And the dogs were on him, and then they get down and they help him. And Jamie goes over to help him, and Claire as well. And
uses his walking stick.
Oh, his stick that he's using
he
also,
a walking
like a little crutch.
Stick to help, yeah.
And he yells at the dogs to shoo, but mostly the stick did it. And Claire knelt next to the priest to see what his wounds would be like. And she said, we find out that he's basically all right, and she asks the priest to come to her surgery so she can clean his cuts.
He has, like, puncture wounds from a dog literally sinking his teeth in
yes.
his thigh
and
wrenching his robe that he's wearing.
Animal mouths are disgusting.
They're very dirty and it's easy.
Well, humans are the worst.
Well, think,
but still.
I know, but think about what they eat.
What they well, lick.
Yeah.
No.
And what they eat.
Not
yeah.
even licking, but what, like, animals eat. Like,
dogs eat
dung.
Cat poop. Okay.
Right.
They eat dog poop.
They'll eat their own, yeah.
They eat,
their own
they, horse they eat their own vomit or their friend's vomit.
So she tells him what? She says...
Oh, she says, come to my surgery and I'll clean your cuts. At least let me do that. And he glares at her as though she had just suggested something like a public indecency.
But she did for the time period.
Well, she wasn't going to do it.
I know.
When
the
woman
it.
Look at his private
he's a priest.
Parts.
He's not seen in that way by anybody.
Yeah.
You know?
Maybe a male doctor.
I don't even think then. I think their whole thing is about being concealed and
yes.
and they're very proper and nobody sees. They're not sexualized
their
in
holiness,
any way,
yeah.
shape, or form.
And then she says what comes back to haunt her. I'm not going to say anything.
Yeah.
Only a chapter away,
foreshadowing.
But still. Foreshadow much. Mm-hmm. She says, suit yourself. If you don't let me cleanse it, it will fester.
That'll teach you to be honest.
There
That's what
know.
Happens when you're honest. Everyone goes against you.
So that is where we're going to call the end of part one of our read-along.
Of chapter 24.
Chapter 24.
By the pricking of my thumbs.
Yes. Lene will be joining us again next week to finish chapter 24. So we hope that we...
And there may or may not be more horsiness. I don't know. I think there's a lot of horsiness just all over. Oh, yeah, there is. Hello.
It's a horsey...
Delivery? There's a horsiness
it's
coming.
It's a horsey chapter. What can I say?
Yeah, so thank you so much for joining us. We look forward to our next episode. Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at OutlanderPod. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/OutlanderPod. Or email us at outlanderpod@gmail.com.
Dreamt it last night that my young